Welcome to the show where the magic unfolds. Technology and art, a story yet untold. From Lagos to Nairobi, Accra to Johannesburg, we're vibing to the beat. Let the rhythm take control. Oh, tech and art come together. We breaking new ground.
Charlie, this is the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. My name is Michael Komlo Pari, and I'm doing this with Ni. Ni, what's up?
Charlie, ideal. How are you?
I'm good. Just frustrated with the Doomsaw situation. So, how has that been for you?
It's been a
and a lot of heat.
Yes, yes.
How is the heat wave and how are you handling it?
I think the heat wave is real. Climate change is real. And the Doomsaw situation is also not helping matters because now you can't even ventilate your rooms. So, you have to find a way to cope with this frustrating experience. But I'm particularly excited about today's podcast. We are talking about inclusion in the creative digital space. I believe three facts exist in that space. There are diverse voices, there are diverse community perspectives, and there are also underrepresented communities in those spaces. And I'm really excited that we have two individuals who have a lot of insight and experiences to share regarding these issues.
Rightly said. And although there are diverse voices and diverse perspectives, there's also that systemic barrier that the sector has faced. And I'm so happy that we have two individuals who we are welcoming today on the podcast to discuss these. We have Ifeose and Kofi Yeboa. I'll let them introduce themselves. Ifeose would go first. Ladies first, of course. And then Kofi would do justice to who he is. Ifeose. Yeah, welcome to the Tech Arts and Soul podcast.
Thank you very much.
You are an artist. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay, so I've been a digital artist for close to a year now. Yeah, I'm very. I consider myself very much a beginner, so I'm still finding my feet to use my art for. My husband, very interested.
Okay, but what inspired you to be an artist?
Well, I feel like it has been a part of me my whole life. But it's now that I have the opportunity to invest in it full time. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay. Okay. Kofi, I saw your article on AI.
Okay.
Yeah, welcome back to Ghana.
You put it like that.
To make up the show.
How are you dealing with the heat wave and the Doomsaw? I hope you haven't experienced Doomsaw yet.
Oh, multiple times, I think. And as we were talking about it pre-production, I'm still surprised that in 2024, a country like a beautiful country like ours still experiences Doomsaw. As for the heat wave, it's extreme, and I think we haven't experienced something like this in a long.
Well, we are told that the reason is the floods. So hopefully when the rainy season goes away, the Doomsaw also go away.
Fingers crossed.
Well, yeah, welcome back. How have your trips been? I saw your recent article in AI. Can you tell us a bit about that and what you do?
Sure. So I will start with what I do. And today I'm not wearing the hat of the organization that I work with, just to put that across. I work with Mozilla Foundation, and I'm a program officer with the foundation. For those of you who I'm not familiar with Mozilla. We are the owners of the Firefox browser. There is also the foundation to it, which owns the corporation Mozilla. And what we do is we try to see how best we can reduce the harms of technology. But also reducing that harm, that aspect has to do with inclusivity as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that is why I am here today. The other hat that I wear there, which probably might be a bit beneficial to the discussion, is I lead a program there called Creative Media Awards Program. And so basically what we do is that we support a cohort of artists to use any form of art to help the public understand the complexities around AI and how it impacts the society.
Okay. Okay. Right. I've seen you put out a lot of art. I follow you on your social media. And recently you painted the lady in braids. And you had that painting. What inspired you to paint, to put that together?
Okay, so I feel like most of my art highlights women. So I like to sometimes I don't have like a specific concept I'm working with, but I want to be able to highlight women. So however that comes out in my art, and I like to play with a lot of vibrant colors. That's just my thing. So that's the whole basis behind that particular painting.
Does it always come to you? Like, you know, some creative people say it comes to me in a dream, or when I sit in a very quiet space, then it happens. How does art come to you?
This year I've been pushing myself to paint every day, and so it stifles your creativity in a way, because you don't have like a lot of time to plan out what you want to do. Always my inspiration to hit you. So these days I know I have to paint, so I take my laptop and just do whatever comes to me.
Okay. Kofi, can you share a personal experience where you had to experience inclusivity, or you've had to experience inclusivity in the workspace and also in your personal space?
It happens a lot, in the sense of when you realize that inclusivity is important. And for those of us who have had the opportunity and privilege to be able to travel and pass through airports, you only realize that you are black when you pass through.
When you leave the shores of
the country. That's where your blackness presents itself to you, through how immigration officers would, you know, question you unnecessarily. Or how when you are in a foreign country, people would point to your color and then, you know, would say some derogatory things about it. Or even in some workplaces where your ideas and thoughts are not valued because of where you are coming from, because there is the perception that it's not what you are presenting. And so that can be quite challenging sometimes. But these days we are fortunate to see growth in especially international organizations embracing inclusivity beyond, you know, just color, but appreciating content, appreciating different thoughts in the workplace.
Okay. Yeah. And speaking of different thoughts, have you ever felt excluded in terms of your art and also in your personal space as a female?
In terms of my art, I feel like the only thing is the fact that I haven't branched into traditional art yet. And so it's like there are some opportunities that require that, and I'm not there yet. But it's something I'm going to learn eventually. So I feel like I'll get over that. But aside that, I don't have like a very specific example when I felt like I was excluded in something.
Okay. You know, Mike, I find what Ifua just said very interesting, because I read somewhere that about 90% of the internet content in the foreseeable future will be AI generated. And Ifua just said that she's planning to go back to do traditional art. What is driving this motivation? I'm curious.
I mean, when you do digital art, I mean, people appreciate the fact that, okay, this is art, all right? But there's always this, you're using a laptop, you're not doing it yourself. You have, like, I don't want to say you're not doing it yourself. But it's like this, there's always this, traditional art is like, people feel like it's more authentic compared to digital. So I'm not trying to shade digital art in any way, because I'm a digital artist.
Right.
But I feel like for me to be well-rounded, at least I should, you know, double in.
Okay. I've seen a couple of your works and I am really, really struck by what you produced so far. Even though you prefer to call yourself a beginner, actually your work says otherwise. But another question, because you are saying very interesting things, and I'm wondering why, because if we are to imagine or say that AI or any tech tool or platform or digital canvas that you use is just something to make your work easy. It's more of a co-creating assistant to you. But what I'm hearing from you is, in your space, if anyone uses that or those tools, you are seen to be, in quote, a lazy artist. Is that a general sentiment there, or is something that you personally feel?
I don't think it's about being called a lazy artist. Digital art isn't easy.
Right.
You spend hours, mm-hmm. you know, putting together a finished body of work.
Right.
So I don't think it's like easier, but it's just can you repeat what you
said? Like a co-creating tool.
Yeah. So I don't like
because at the end of the day, I believe you are the artist behind it. You have the imagination of what you want to. Of what you want to produce, and the digital tool or whatever platform it is there to assist you manifest that imagination. So at the end of the day, your work is still authentic because the imagination is coming from you, and that artificial intelligence is just helping you to bring that to life.
I'm always frustrated by that conversation. And there's a whole lot of debate ongoing, and I'm always on the side of the artist.
Okay.
And the reason is that, and I think Efo would agree with me, that there has been different kinds of digital tools used for artistic work these days.
Yeah.
And with AI, those tools advanced.
Right.
So we still have Photoshops. We still have different, but those are like, it doesn't generate. And it doesn't feed on enough data, and not just any data, but data from the first work. It doesn't feed on that.
Right.
Generate new kinds of images or artistic work.
Mm.
And so that's where my caution and argument comes in, is that with advancement of AI art technologies, right? If those AI models that are being trained with data that belongs to IFWA, and she's not paid for that, that's a copyright infringement. Or if one loses, right? Looking at how the artistic field is male dominated, how does IFWA get, if one gets paid? That's always been my argument. So yes, the existing ones would support or assist with artistic work, but with the new AI tools, it doesn't really support artistic work. The other side also is that there is a learning process of doing artistic work. And with AI, you lose that, right? It's just like the whole ChatGPT education debate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where I would pause on that, but have it.
Okay.
And when you say AI assisted arts, I feel like that's different from somebody using, say, I use Krita. It's a version of Photoshop for painting.
Right.
So when you say AI art, I would not agree with that, because I'm still like doing the work myself.
Absolutely.
You're seeing everything in myself.
Absolutely. So I believe that we are saying the same thing. When I refer to AI platforms, I am sort of trying to differentiate what you do. You are using a digital platform. That doesn't generate. You generate it. You do the whole work. But just that the platform that you're using, instead of physical canvas, you are using the digital canvas. So that is different from what we have with the DALL-E and the Mid Journey and then what have you. That are totally AI generated the prompt.
Yeah.
So that is different. So my question to you was like, why you want to, because my understanding of going to traditional art is like going for the physical canvas and painting. And I'm curious about why you are not sticking to the still use the digital platform.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that I don't see it shade digital art in any way, or like reduce the, like, puts like a bad thing on the hard work that digital artists do. I just feel like we're humans. Everybody
right.
does, like, they want to see that you put pen strokes on a physical canvas for it to be real to them.
They want to see blood and sweat and toil on the canvas.
Like, okay, you did it on a laptop. Yeah, it's fine. People appreciate that too. But generally, for me, I feel like people like lean more towards the traditional art than the digital.
a final follow-up question to you on this. So let's say you switch to the traditional painting. Will you agree to sell that work to people who want to use that to train AI to be able to auto-generate paintings similar to yours in the future?
Why? Why would you not agree to sell it?
You'll be well paid.
I don't have anything more to say.
Okay. Kofi, you have been in the corporate setting. What are some practical ways in your space that you bring inclusivity into the conversation, or that you include minorities in the corporate space on your end? What are some of the practical strategies that you've employed that you can tell us about?
I think we do a lot of advocacy work. And so what that means is, how do we ensure that these digital creative platforms or spaces are inclusive in terms of design, right? For people like persons with disability to be able to use it. And I think that's an important, because if you look at, and as if we say, if you look at the traditional space of even the art room, it's difficult for persons with disabilities to be able to even use the brushes, yeah. Right? And so when we transfer that into the digital space, how do we make sure that Photoshop, you know, somebody who is visually impaired can use it, right? And so for us, we push corporate entities like Photoshop to be able to design such spaces for visually impaired artists to be able to use, for persons who are physically impaired to be able to use. But one thing that I always personally caution is that the fact that these platforms provide or afford persons with different abilities to be able to function does not mean they can do it independently. They still need assistance to be able to do that.
Okay, you speak about pushing these corporate entities. How has the acceptance been in terms of you doing the advocacy and then they actually incorporating it into the design of whatever products that they are putting out there?
It's a very good question, because one, it's expensive developing those assistive tools.
Yes.
It is very expensive. And also, it doesn't generate the kind of income that they or the revenue that they expect.
Exactly.
But the core thing here is that if you are a company like Adobe, you have a responsibility, right, to ensure that your users, and every user for that matter, can have access to it, right? If whoever designed that platform is a male, they would design it in such a way that it fits a male context.
Yes.
How do you ensure that women can still access it and feel comfortable to use it? So that, and sometimes, you know, there are some other organizations that will do like a benchmark each year to see which companies are very inclusive. You have organizations like World Benchmarking Alliance, and then they will do that. So it pushes pressure on investors to be able to push the companies to do that.
Okay. If we are in your work, I know you do digital arts for individuals and corporates. Have you ever had the situation where a corporate insisted that your art had to be inclusive, or you had to make sure that it represented some sort of inclusion? And
I did some work for Drama Queens. It's a women-led, women-inclusive organization. They wanted to talk about the whole thing happening with Palestine, the whole... Yeah, so it was... They were very, like, particular about me being very, like, inclusive in representing all the countries involved in that situation. So that was a thing. But aside that, personally, I feel like the thing that I do that I feel like it's good in the sense of sharing my art, representing women.
Okay.
I don't know if I can add this as well. One of the things that we do, again, I'm not wearing the Mozilla hat, but one of the things that we do is, especially when we are doing conferences, we try to have artists present to be able to translate the conversation into an artistic form. And we make sure that they are paid what they deserve. And that is really rare these days, right? But it's something that we are really, really particular about, right? Because it's part of the inclusivity, because artists, sometimes we see artist work is separate from, you know, different. So, but we try to put the two together.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And Kofi, this one goes to you. I know you are not wearing the Mozilla hat, so I want to tap into your personal opinion on this. So, artists are very important in ensuring inclusivity as well. So what is the current progress on ensuring that diverse voices and perspectives are included in the next level AI systems? And just listening to Ifua here right now, she made it emphatic that if she happens to produce a traditional piece of painting, there's no way she'll be selling that to any AI platform. So what are you doing to, you know, get them, to loop them in into the whole process of assistive technology for the future?
One thing that you mentioned that is really key is diversity. And language is really important in that sense. And I know we are talking about creative work, and so it goes beyond the artistic work to include, you know, like films and things like that.
Absolutely.
And games and all that. And in particular, in the film industry, you would realize that language is important, especially local languages is important. And how we experience the digital platforms are all in English, right? So, for instance, Mozilla has something called Common Voice, where it's a platform that collects voices in different languages, right? Which enables anybody, as a developer, a startup organization, a researcher, to be able to access that voice data set in different African languages to produce whatever content that they want to produce, right? Unlike previously where you have big tech companies monopolizing such data, we have it open to everybody to access it. And I think that's a very important important point. Aside Mozilla, I think generally from my studies as well, I've also realized that there's a lot of interest in investing in local content. Companies are beginning to design mobile tools that can accommodate creative work. So for instance, there was I think it's called Jio or something like that. It's a company in India, where they designed this portable phone, very cheap, but for rural communities. And guess what they did to that? They added a streaming platform to it, which increased the streaming of local movies. They shot the revenue, you know, really high. But who would have thought that a rural community would have contributed to the company's revenue? I think we are big, you know, companies, marginalized communities are beginning to show that they are profitable. Yeah.
Right. And I can also get that on other platforms, especially on even Netflix, because initially when you look at the tabs on Netflix, for instance, they used to segregate the market, but now they call it Made in Africa because they are congregating the whole African content under one category. And that's really interesting. But what I'm also hearing you say is that right now the best strategy to go in international is doing local. Local is what goes global now. That's what I'm hearing from you. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Ifua, so as an artist, what's your biggest challenge in deriving arts that is inclusive? What's the biggest challenge that you face? So in terms of generating your artwork or working for individuals or corporates, what are some of the challenges that you navigate if you have to put out art that is inclusive or consider minorities in the arts that you develop?
I feel like
Okay, let me make it more practical. So, like, what's your range? What kind of, does your paintings, like, cover the vulnerable? Does it cover social justice issues? Does it focus on women? Does it focus on accountability issues? Like, what was the range of your paintings?
As I said, I'm still very much finding my feet, but so far I've just been tackling, like, just representing women as much as possible.
So, and what you did for drama
about inclusivity. I don't think I've gotten, like, an organization or a corporate institute ask me to, you know, do some work that is related to that yet. So I don't think I have a very specific...
Just wake up. Okay. For Kofi, you are in the corporate space. Apart from the whole process being very expensive, what are some major challenges that you personally have had to go through in terms of ensuring that inclusivity for products that Mozilla produces for these minorities to ensure inclusion?
I wish I was on the product side to give you a very accurate response. On top of my head, I might not be right, but I think that the product team is really cautious around accessibility in terms of people with different abilities to be able to access, especially the web platforms or the browser. Languages is also really important, and so that is integrated in there. And I think in terms of also product in general, not just Mozilla, we also try to use ourselves as an example, because it started as a community, right? And community is not just about able.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, a different form. So how can we ensure that sense of community is part of the design principles of these technology platforms or data platforms that we use? I would like to just touch a little bit on the question you asked before, because I think it's really important. I haven't seen so many, for instance, advertisements that are, you know, proper, but not the one that is focused on disabled people, but like regular corporate ones that would use disabled people or physically challenged or whatever. You hardly see them. And you would wonder why. These are sort of the things that I think we need to, like,
push for. Yeah. And what would you advise in terms of, so you are in the corporate space, in terms of leadership, what are some tips that you would give to leaders to ensure that we get the inclusion conversation going on at a much larger range than it is now?
I think we have to understand that the creative industry is profitable. And if we invest in it, we're going to reap it, right? Because there's a lot of other countries that are making important strides in terms of how they're investing in these in the creative industry. We need to be really specific as to the strategies involved, as to why we want to do it. And I think oftentimes that does not happen because probably we belittle the creative industry. And so that is something that I would stress on, is let's invest in it, but be intentional about investing in it. Let also take the risk and invest in communities that are underrepresented. Because I think when we're starting the program, you mentioned something important, is that having different communities being present or marginalized groups being present increases innovation. And I think it's something that we underestimate or undervalue.
Okay. Ifwa, you are an artist that is starting out. How is your future as an artist looking like when you consider inclusion? Or how do you foresee integrating inclusion in your art going forward?
I feel like the most important thing about inclusion is representation. Like, to be able to use my art to, you know, give space for people who do not feel seen, like mainstream media. I feel like that's important, because for somebody to even aspire to be something, they need to see some of themselves in whatever place they want to get to. So I feel like I want to be able to reach where I can create space for people to feel seen.
Okay. Kofi, for you, how do you envision the future in terms of inclusion? What do you think are some practical steps that you've already taken or that you are starting in terms of the future of inclusion for your company? And then also personally, I want you to speak personally to that.
Yeah, I think we need to start sort of taking a critical look at existing digital platforms. Especially with where the transformation is going, we need to be intentional about these creative digital platforms and how do we intentionally design it to have that aspect of inclusivity in it, whether it's the features, whether it's the entire design of the platform, so that we can have variety of creative outputs. I think that is really important. From a policy perspective, I think, funny enough, Ghana is just going through a re-culture policy. And then when you look at it, all the three objectives that they have outlined as part of the review process, you don't see the digital element in it. There's a cultural entrepreneurship, which probably is all bundled in there. But I think there's a need to be really intentional around how creative industry, a governmental perspective, is going to take advantage of the digital ecosystem or the digital economy. I think that is really important, because if you look at UAE, Germany, and I think Australia, they have done amazing work in terms of identifying how that can contribute to their GDP. And I think that's an important point that with government agencies who are in charge of the ministries who are in charge of the tourism and art and culture and all the names need to unpack and then design very specific policies to be able to map out the strategies to be able to achieve that. I think it's really important.
Okay. You talk about design of a policy. Are there any suggestions that you'd want to give out there? Because, I mean, of course, people would pick up our conversation. Can you speak to about two or three things that you'd want to be included in policy design?
I think it's about the stakeholder, the stakeholders involved in the designing of the policy. There needs to be people, persons with disabilities, different communities first, not just the policymakers, not just the development partners, but artistic communities, right? Persons with disabilities who are also involved with artistic work, they need to be there to sort of voice out exactly what they want to see in terms of how this policy would benefit them. And in that process, and it's not just bringing them to the table, because let's remember, there's power dynamics in the policy. The multi-stakeholder thing.
Yes.
So how do you ensure that you level out the power dynamics so that voices can be heard? That's the only, because if a development partner who is funding a policy discussion, and I think development partners have a really interesting, important role to play, and they can ensure that there is that level of power, equal power, and to enable these different communities to be able to voice out exactly what they want to see in the design of the.
Now, I have a question for Ifua. What's your advice for any artist that is starting out or an artist that is already there? How would you challenge them to be inclusive in the work that they do?
I feel like as individuals, like in the society, I feel like we owe it to ourselves to, you know, try to make things better for one another. And I feel like because the majority fits the societal norm, it's very easy to forget that, oh, there are some people that do not feel seen. There are some people that feel very underrepresented. So I feel like in any small way you can, for example, when I post my ads on Twitter, sounds like when I remember to, I put the alt text on the image, so at least somebody can use that to, you know, visualize what I put out there. So in everybody's small way, I feel like in whatever small way you can do, like, something to contribute to. inclusion.
Okay. Nee?
Yeah.
We've been speaking about inclusion a lot.
Yeah.
Personally for you, how have you ensured inclusion as well in your own space and also along your professional work?
Okay, so I think Kofi mentioned that is if you want to take any step towards inclusion, don't assume that you have the best strategy towards that. I think the best thing you have to do from the get-go is to make sure that you get diverse, you ensure that there's diversity in stakeholder engagement in the first place. And that is really, really important because experiences differ and experiences are relative. So you can have an intellectual understanding of someone's experience, but there's also lived experience. So someone who has suffered bias or racism or has been stereotyped elsewhere, the experience of that, the personal experience of that is more profound than just sitting somewhere and reading about racism or stereotyping or bias in a book. So it's always important that you engage those people to hear their perspectives. That is very, very important. So when it comes to my dealings with people, I always make sure that I reach out to people who first and foremost are likely to be directly impacted by a certain decision that is going to be made. That is really, really important. Oftentimes, what we see happening in other spaces is that it's after the impact. And now we switch to damage control mode and let's say, okay, how best can we manage the situation? And when it comes to developments in the digital spaces, we've seen that a lot. The coming of the internet and even artificial intelligence, we are talking about how we can ensure equity in representation when it comes to even the data sets that are being used to train AI. So all these things are important. But then Kofi mentioned that he who pays the piper calls the tune. So for us in the global south, for us in West Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, Ghana for that matter, if we are not contributing resources and actively doing our possible best to be taken seriously at the table, whoever is funding the process, you know, gets his or her interest met first before we will be considered. That is a reality when it comes to even affairs at the geopolitical level. So for me, I think we have to be very proactive. It's not just about talking, but we also have to make sure that we dedicate resources to ensuring inclusion in policies, ensuring inclusion in even what is happening, current developments in artificial intelligence and even the development of AI tools for the future. We shouldn't wait till these tools have been developed. And finally, let me refer to an important work that Bloomberg did some time ago. So I think their team decided to audit the equity and representation when it comes to results that some picture AI tools are generating. And quite an overwhelming majority of the content were kind of very white.
You know, so. I was about to come to Kofi on that, but you know, yes.
And I read it and I was just saying my head, yes, okay, they are white. So what is Africa going to do? We are going to start crying and shouting, but there are also black people. Where are we? Why are we not represented yet? But you look at all the, trace the funding in all of these developments and where is the money coming from? So, you know, the results has to reflect where the money is coming from. And that's what we are saying. But that's not to give an excuse that we shouldn't take inclusion seriously.
Okay. I want to put Kofi on the spot. Kofi, how well are we doing with incorporating African data for AI or for machine learning? How well are we doing on your end?
It's a tough question to answer because, as Ni rightly said, a lot of the AI models feed on data that is not ours. But even now with the data collection in our own continent, majority is not done by us. Most of the data, and even some of the data, or most of the data that is being collected does not sit in our jurisdiction. Now, remember, there's Facebook and Google have built internet infrastructures, you know, across internet infrastructure across major parts of Africa, right? And all that all the data points to it, right? And so we do have some data centers. We do have data centers in the in the continent, but then again,
but do we own the data at those data centers?
That's a different discussion. But we do have some control over it. But for instance, if you're using Facebook, if you're using all these Western platforms, right, the data doesn't sit with our government.
Yeah.
Right. It sits in Ireland or in the US or so we don't have control. And so that's why most of the again, when you look at the AI models, there's a platform called there's a tool called Common Crawl that collects all the data.
Right.
And then all these AI companies collect that data, refine it, and then train the AI models. About 80% of it comes from Wikipedia. Wikipedia is 90% or so English. Right. Now they are doing really a great job to reduce that. But again, we have to invest in our systems to be able to have that representation. But as Nee said, they also still have a responsibility because we are consumers and we can demand that.
Yeah.
Are we demanding enough from them?
I don't think we are demanding a lot from them.
Or are we demanding at all?
I don't think so because, again, there is something important that you mentioned around geopolitics. I think something that I've personally realized through my research is that there's tech aid, and now there's, I would call it AI aid, right? That is happening now, right? Because in our part of the world, we are waiting for investment from foreign countries, right? Countries like the US, China, Singapore, Canada have done a lot of investment. None of our countries have done that. Even our AI policies that have been developed are funded by external stakeholders.
Okay. Okay. I want you to speak to what are some future trends that you are observing in terms of the inclusion conversation?
Okay, so the first one is that in the foreseeable future, we'll be seeing, you know, a decent equity when it comes to representation in AI. I'm saying this because if you recall, just recently, Google had to withdraw the image generating capacity of one of their AI tools because actually the prompts were generating results that inured to the advantage of we in the global south rather than the people that were paying. And you see, they started making noise because they know that, like, we are putting serious money into, you know, R&D for these things. And why are you representing the people who are just sitting back and, you know, making noise? And Google immediately has to, you know, do something about it. So that should tell you that for me, what that suggested strongly was that Google is taking equity and representation seriously. So it means that in the near future, we'll have some decent representation in AI platforms. The second thing too is that I believe there is hope for our painters as well, because as Ifua rightly mentioned in the conversation early on, this will sound counterintuitive, but when AI becomes so powerful enough to generate very mind-blowing images or digital creative product, I believe that is actually going to trigger an exponential demand for unique painting. And that is where people like Ifua stands to make a lot of money. Because when AI tools become so powerful that they are able to generate a lot of images, it will become common. And the value of creative artifacts is their scarcity that makes them, you know, very, very valuable. So that is where people like Ifua will start to make money. So in the future, I see a big win for artists. Whether Ifua at some point decides to change their mind and maybe outsource a part of their work to, you know, the big players. Because if Google walks to Ifua and says, I'm paying you $50,000 to take some of your painting to train, I'm not sure he will say no.
Well, and I was coming to that. I was coming to that, and in terms of AI growing so powerfully that it becomes commonplace for most artists, won't that automatically exclude artists like you who want to toe the original path and not include AI in their work?
No, I feel like in as much as AI can produce nice art, it still lacks the human touch to it. Like, no matter how intelligent whatever input you put in, we're still going to be essential. So I feel like, yeah, there's that. There's the conversation of it taking over the art space and all of that. But he can't throw away human.
Okay, interesting. Kofi, future trends in the inclusion conversation?
I would argue a little bit different from me.
Okay.
Because I still hold my stand behind that, yes, even though I agree that AI tools would provide extreme assistance for artists, I'm also very cautious about how they are going to be compensated for their work. Because, for instance, some of the AI models will be trained on what IFO has posted on Twitter.
Yes.
Right? Because that's where they feed the information. But IFO wouldn't know, and she wouldn't get paid. All the writers, all their work that, for instance, ChatGPT is being trained on to generate journalistic pieces, they are not being paid for that. Right? So how do you ensure that the work of artists are paid? And that's where I'm a bit cautious around, because what we're going to see is more of effort being put into the work by artists, and then they are not being compensated for. And then they will say that,
yes. But AI is actually just still taking from the artist and giving nothing back.
Yeah.
Also, one thing I was thinking about is how, like, we should remember that it's Ghana that we are in. We're not considering that part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Traditional, you would think you want to be inclusive and you want to, you know, represent some specific groups that I refuse to mention, but you can be thrown in jail for that.
Right.
So I feel like that's also something you should consider.
Right. I said at the beginning of the conversation that I was looking forward to a very engaging and insightful one, and I believe Ifua and Kofi have been able to give us that, and Kofi initiated a debate, and I mean, we'll continue that off air. But I made a lot of interesting points, and what really jumped at me during our conversation is this. So, first and foremost, we have to define inclusion if we want to take it seriously at the policy level when it comes to the creative digital space. And then we also have to pay serious attention to representation in terms of its impact on underrepresented communities, and making sure that the how some organizations or corporations are using quietly using IFO's works to train their AI tools. We also have to look in that to ensure that there is fair compensation. But you cannot just hide it in some broad, tall terms and conditions that he has to agree to use those platforms as well. The other thing too is that we have to look at the role of technology in itself in promoting inclusion. Oftentimes we talk about inclusion after the products have been developed, but we have to look at it from the get-go at the development stage as well, and make sure that there is equity and fairness there before they become full-fledged product. And then we also have to pay attention to how to proactively recognize and overcome unconscious bias and stereotypes in digital creative work, and also ensuring online environments that welcome diverse perspectives and worldviews. So the part where Kofi spoke about considering other languages other than English is very, very important. So yes, these are the points that I gathered.
Great. For me, the biggest takeaway is investing in our data, and then also owning the data that we are churning out. It sticks out for me because it feels like most of the time when we talk about the inclusion conversation, we talk about it broadly, but we don't consider the fact that we are investing in making the change. We rather wait for someone to come from elsewhere to come and invest in
poor country.
And yes, so that sticks out for me, and we need to make a conscious effort. Leadership has to take the reins and then make sure that we are finding money to fund these things. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. Subscribe to our content, leave us a review and share. Stick and stay with us and expect and look forward to the next episode. We hope that our conversations were insightful and you loved it. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, tech and art, come together. We breaking new ground.